Today's topic is Samadhi, the fourth of the five faculties. And to begin with a short quote by the Buddha about the importance of Samadhi, the Buddha gave the instruction, develop Samadhi because if you develop samadhi, you will see things as they are. Seeing things as they are is one of the primary purposes of vipassana practice, of Buddhist meditation. And seeing things as they are is meant to become liberating insight, insight that liberates us in some way. And the Buddha said that the means to that is to develop concentration. And what's fascinating about this quote, it's kind of like saying it will happen from concentration. Develop concentration, for if you develop concentration, you will see things as they are. So that kind of gives you some sense of the central important role it has. So the topic of this retreat is the five faculties. And I use the word is to rather than are the five faculties, because I hold them together as a unity, as a whole. And we can certainly distinguish between the five, and we are in the talks for this retreat. But you are singular, kind of. You're a unit. You're one person. And those five faculties live in you. So to separate them out only goes so far because you're whole, whether you know it or not. And so these five faculties in you as a whole, they work together. And the harmonizing or the cooperative working of these five is part of what we're looking to develop here, what develops through practice. And when one of them is wonky, then things don't quite work right. And today, this afternoon, I was walking a bit around the perimeter trail, and I have a lot of faith in those trails and in my ability to walk them and where they take me. I know how to engage the energy to walk those trails. I have the mindfulness it takes to walk them carefully and well. And I have some degree of focus and concentration, steadiness as I do it. And I have some discernment. If some of those are kind of off, it doesn't really work. You might have a lot of faith in those paths or in your ability to walk it, but if you have no discernment, you might be looking for the path in the laundry room downstairs. And the only thing that's deeper and further in the laundry room is the boiler room. So that doesn't really, you know, there's not much discernment looking for a path in the woods in the laundry room. But if you have a lot of discernment to find the trail, but you have no confidence that you could walk it, then you might say, well, you know, it's the woods are dark, they're overgrown, probably scary, there's probably trolls in these woods. Who knows what's down there? And I'm sure they haven't, these Buddhists haven't really taken care of all the dangers. And so there's discernment to find it, but there's no faith that it's worth going or it's safe to go. And so then we don't go. Or we don't put the effort in, no energy to going. Or we put the wrong kind of energy in. Or if there's no mindfulness, maybe we slip, twist our ankle. But the idea is that we have all these kind of working together, harmoniously supporting each other in a whole that becomes your whole, contributes to your whole, your wholeness when they're all there. Now, it might be easy to overlook the importance of these five, but I we're calling them divinities. And I loved when Don referred to Indra as the kind of the god of protection. And so it's the protecting faculties that you have that protect you, that support you. And to carry these with you and support you is quite something. To have them in some way or other kind of they're the controlling agents, they're the guiding agents, they're kind of like the what makes it all kind of work in some way. And to refer them to that way without to have such an important role for a human being without saying you're supposed to be in control, you're supposed to be the protector. Certainly it's fine to have some of that, but to actually say there's something else going on here that's not so personal in the usual way in which we get wrapped up and caught up in identity and taking things personally and me and myself and I have to do it and I can't do it and all these kinds of things. As many of you know, one of the great spiritual questions of all times is, who am I? I think in early Buddhism, we don't ask that question very much. I think maybe maybe representing early Buddhism better would be the question, who are I? Who are I? Or what are I? What is the activity that I am? And what's coursing through me? A lot of that has to do with the faculties. The faculties can be alive. The faculties can, when they are operating in harmony or cooperatively, there's something, it's certainly ours, it's in us, but they don't, at the same time, don't feel so personal. And it's a phenomenal thing to have something that's powerful within, moving through us, supporting us, and somehow you can't quite make it yours, like this is me. And I would suggest there's something about the nature of faith that's not quite something you own or possess or an acquisition. There's something there bigger or wider or freer than just how you kind of, any narrow way you hold yourself. Engagement, effort, same thing. Mindfulness, certainly. When mindfulness is strong and operating, certainly your mindfulness, but you can't really take it to be you. And samadhi, certainly. And discernment and wisdom as well. And these are phenomenal capacities, as we keep saying. And that's interesting to think about the action as we, as practitioners, can have in relationship to these five. Propose that faith is something we can value. We can value confidence and value the role of faith. Effort is something we can enjoy. Without some enjoyment, some delight, pleasure, and sooner or later in doing this practice, something's a little bit tough. Certainly it's challenging in the beginning, and then it's challenging in the middle, and then it's challenging at the end, but it's also, there should be some joy and engagement and delight and the effort, the doing, the coursing through. And mindfulness is something to love. Samadhi is something to revere, as if samadhi is almost like something sacred. And discernment is something to heed. something to listen to. So that's a pretty good list. Something to value, something to enjoy, something to love, something to revere, and something to heed. That's it. Now it's getting more interesting, I hope, these five faculties. And then they're in you. Maybe in some ways to discover who you are is maybe not something so abstract, but is found through these five faculties. And I certainly think that's the case with the fourth faculty, with samadhi. There has been a long history in Theravadan Buddhism of somehow teasing sati and samadhi apart, or holding mindfulness and concentration as two very distinct, even practices. And certainly it can be seen as two distinct practices, but the five faculties are not practices. The five faculties are capacities we have. And as capacities within us, these are capacities that are meant to work together in harmony, work together cooperatively. And to hold these two things, samadhi and sati, apart, doesn't allow them to support each other, to work together. Now, if all you had to develop, though, is one thing, then I would encourage you to develop some sati, mindfulness, awareness. There's often said that all the other faculties follow along and are developed nicely in the wake of mindfulness. And mindfulness is kind of a treasure to love, especially if we can learn how to do it in its most simple forms. And the most simple forms is just simply to know what's happening as it's happening, or as said earlier, to know an experience as we're experiencing it, know it as an experience. Simply to be present for something in the simplicity of what it is. Simplicity means without the interpretations we overlay it, the projections we put on top of it, the values, the stories, the commentary we put. Just to experience something in simplicity. And in that simplicity of just simply holding an awareness, experiencing an awareness, knowing this is what's happening, it can seem kind of like not very interesting. It's very little monetary value in just holding something in awareness. So, good is it then? But to hold something in awareness, just allow it to be in awareness, just to be simple and know it for a moment what it is. I think one of the things I'd like to compare it to is, if we're wrapped up in something, really caught up in some project, and we're stressed out and very busy and all that, then we might ask for a time out. We want to get breathing room or breathing break, and we might, go take a little vacation, or if it's really big, or just go sit and have a cup of tea. And what we're doing in that time is we're no longer engaging in the preoccupation. And then we find that by taking a break, we somehow regenerate ourselves a little bit. We relax a little bit. We soften a little bit, we get a little bit renewed, and we can come back kind of fresher. And we weren't doing anything to refresh ourselves except just sit there and have tea and look out of the garden or something. And the system began to unwind and settle. So this simple act of mindfulness, if you can keep it that simple, then the activities of the mind, where the flow, the juice of the mind is going, just being aware, is no longer perpetuating all the chatter of the mind, the busyness of the mind. There's a lot of doing in our minds, if you probably have noticed by now. Planning and remembering and figuring out better rejoinders of conversations you had long ago, or or trying to solve something or understand yourself or try to review a story that what happened for the 32nd time, hopefully you can squeeze out some new understanding from it, what happened there. Or we're constantly trying to work the system, work our inner system. Like if I just kind of like, if I just lift my left knee a little bit in this sitting and lean a little bit over to the right, then maybe the breathing will kind of, left lung will kind of be a little bit more soft and because it's a little bit tight. And then if it's relaxed, then maybe I can get myself a little bit into a more focused position. If I get more focused, then I won't feel the pain in my right ankle. And if I don't feel the pain in my right ankle, then there's maybe hope that I can do the practice they're trying to teach me here, the retreat. So we're kind of like trying to make it all, make it work or get rid of something or want something. Or one of the great, I don't know if this is good, follows exactly, but it just comes to mind. They have all these great things, all these great practices in Zen that just really show you your mind. So one of them is the late night optional sittings. Required optional sittings. They're broadcast. It's optional, but everyone has to go. And so it's after hours, everyone's sitting there. And there's no end. Except you're allowed to go to bed after the person who's more senior than you in the monastery has gone to bed. So here we are waiting, right? So I've been sitting there, doing my Zen thing and kind of glancing to my left and right. Why are they still there? And kind of thinking, they're not sitting Zazen. They're not meditating. What do you think I was doing? I wasn't either, criticizing them, saying they're not meditating. It means I'm not meditating, waiting for them. But in Japan, it was fun because in Japan, I was like one of the most junior. So, and it was November and the Siberian winds were blowing in and it was outside on the porch. The only thing that was nice about it was it's a beautiful rock garden. And we had shaved heads and so we were waiting for the seniors to go to bed and there's a lot of seniors. And then finally, at some point, there was a magic moment where there was, six of us left or something. I guess they treated themselves as a group, kind of like same seniority. So when we just, suddenly when six of us was there, everyone just took their, because in Zen they had these really long sleeves, and they took the sleeves, they leaned against the wall, they put the sleeves to make it a hat to cover their head, and then they started talking about baseball. The things that go on in Zen monasteries. So until it was, long enough time had gone past, it was okay to go to bed too. I don't know, why did I tell you all that? So all these things that people do, besides just be present in a simple way. Mm-hmm. Just be there, just be simple, and just know what's happening. And if you do that simple thing of just knowing, it's a way of beginning to unravel all the doings that we do, all the complications that we live our life under. It's not a small thing to just be aware and do nothing else. It's actually a radical thing because it begins to undo, supports the undoing of all the complexity we live our lives by. And we don't even know how complex we live our lives by until we start this process and we begin unwinding and settling and letting go and letting this unwinding kind of begin showing itself. And we say, wow, I didn't know I was doing that in my mind. I didn't know I was believing that. I don't know I was trying to accomplish that. I didn't realize I was always afraid. I never paid attention long enough. I knew I had fear, but now it's not uncommon for some people on retreat to discover, wow, I'm actually all afraid all the time. And so that's a kind of revelation, and that's a doing. And so we know that, and then slowly the extra doings begin to settle away. And so just to learn that, that simplicity of mindfulness is fantastic. Even more wonderful is to have the samadhi and the sati come together. And they're not so separate from each other. I think of the image I have for sati right now is just to see what's there in the situation. But initially, it's kind of like having an overview of what's going on. Kind of like you're up in a hot air balloon, high up above the landscape, looking down. And you can see a lot. Samadhi, partly, is that hot air balloon settles and comes closer and closer to the ground, to its native land, and then comes to rest there. And this capacity just to rest right here in our experience. One of the first metaphors I received about samadhi was that of a very thin, flat little rock that you might use for skipping on water. But if you put it into the water, this is the way it was described to me, and you put it in kind of horizontally, and then it settles to the bottom, kind of rocking back and forth a little bit, and slowly it goes down to the bottom and settles on the bottom. So this idea of samadhi is this kind of settling. So it's a stability, a steadiness, just being there still. So mindfulness sees and samadhi settles. Samadhi steadies. And the samadhi also has the role of unifying the five faculties. It has the role of bringing everything together. So all our attentional faculties are operating together for the same purpose at the same time. Samadhi is a gathering together. And it's kind of what the word literally means in Sanskrit or Pali. A gathering together, bringing together, holding together. And so this togetherness. The first teaching, Theravadin teaching, I ever received about samadhi is one of my first days I was in Thailand. A monk said to me that a samadhi is all about letting go. I thought that was kind of interesting. And before that, I'd done Zen practice, and no one had told me that in Zen, so I didn't know what samadhi was, but just because not knowing anything, I thought I had to huff and puff. I thought I had to strain and push and like really, really, you know, to do it, to get concentrated. And it turned out that was a recipe for misery. And in fact, and I didn't know that that was the miserable path. So my way of doing it was I would try to get concentrated. I'd be miserable. It wouldn't work because I was pushing and straining. And it was, you know, like I had to do it. I had to control it, make it happen. And then things would just get worse. So my solution to that was to try harder. And then it became worse. And the solution to that was to try harder. And I didn't know anything else to do until finally I reached rock bottom. And then all that was left to do, and I had no choice, it was just like, it was the end, was just give up. And that was letting go. That was the beginning of the meditation beginning to settle and the samadhi beginning to grow and to happen because I let go. And in the teachings of the Buddha, the things that are let go of to develop samadhi that he emphasizes is the five hindrances. We let go of being preoccupied, caught up in, fantasizing, wanting sensual desires. We give up, we let go of, we settle, we quiet down, we still the drive towards ill will, aversion. we somehow rectify and settle or awaken or move beyond sloth and torpor. We somehow are able to overcome restlessness and regret. They become still, they become quiet, they recede into the background. And doubt no longer is driving us. And, you know, that's a whole thing. It's, you know, it's, these are, this is a, from some people, a many years project to come to terms with the hindrances, understand them, and no longer be caught by them. But it's important to know that that's kind of the direction, because being caught, being entangled, is being caught and being entangled. Being caught and entangled is not the freedom, not the openness that allows something deep to settle. It doesn't create the clarity that allows seeing clearly, that allows even mindfulness to work clearly enough. And so to no longer believe, to no longer be invested in or believe in the hindrances is a huge step. It's not easy to have the hindrances kind of abate or quiet down. It is easier to no longer believe in them, to no longer think, you know, this is the solution. This is going to do it for me. This is true. And so to no longer believe them and to recognize them and know they're there, then we can step away and let the mindfulness, a simple mindfulness, handle them. Oh, there's doubt. It's just doubt. I don't have to believe it. I don't have to invest in it. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to. I'm capable of just seeing it as doubt. Being aware, oh, it's just doubt, a doubt experience, just doubt. And it has no control over me. Restlessness and regrets. Can you put the wonderful, fantastic, powerful four-letter word in front of regret? Just regret. Just restlessness. Just sloth, just torpor, just ill will or aversion, just sensual desire. And in those four letter word, just, are you able to feel or smell or taste the freedom that's there? The freedom of not being entangled or caught or doing something or fixing or running away or judging yourself because of it or all these kind of layers of things we do. Wow, just. So the Buddha said that when these are let go of, the hindrances, and we learn how to let go or not have them no longer kind of control us, that's when the process of samadhi begins. That's when the process of letting go can go deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's a process of kind of relaxing, opening, letting go into greater awareness, into a greater contact with reality. And the continuity of samadhi, of concentration, is having a continuous contact, continuous intimacy of this letting go into our experience. So good, yes, just stay there, be there, settle in, let go into your breathing, let go into a continuity of just resting and surfing the breath or hanging with the breath or like you kind of like enter the world of breathing like you'd enter into a refreshing pool of water or a warm pool of water. And samadhi, as you know, is kind of like this life force inside of us. So this is why we have to be very careful not to use the control tower to develop concentration. Like you're supposed to kind of like have your laser beam. Samadhi is a state of being unified or composed around the experience we're having. So rather than when you want to concentrate on your breathing, that could be the same as compose yourself around your breath. Settle yourself around the breath. Gather yourself around the breathing so that your intention is to be there, so that your attention is with it, so that your physical sensations are together with your breathing. You really feel the sensations there, your body's there, connected to breathing. Your love is there, your dedication is there with it. Your effort is directed in that direction. And you use your discernment and your faith to really stay there. And what does it take to kind of hang there and let go into it? And what does it take? What do you have to keep letting go of when it creeps in? Just let go so you can be there, the simplicity of just this experience. There's all these metaphors that the Buddha uses for samadhi. And they kind of speak to different ways in which the practice of concentration or the being mindful, you know, with a steady, engaged kind of quality can take. One is kind of like, I think Buddha uses an example like massage. It uses like kneading water into dough kind of example. And I think of it as, you know, this rhythm of pushing in and release, pushing in and release, or making contact and then squeezing, making contact and squeezing, pulling back, making contact and squeezing. And so the mind wanders off, and then we come back and we touch the breathing, and then we kind of hang in there, kind of ride the breath. Maybe like there's a rhythm. Just stay there. Or I like the analogy of pushing a scooter. You push with one foot, and then you kind of glide for a while, and you push again. So you make contact with your breathing, and then you kind of ride it for a while. And then at some point you wander off. But you're a good scooter. You know about scooters, you feel the loss of momentum, and so you push again, you come back again and again. And that, for me, that's a much better image of meditation than your concentration. You just stay there and just be upset if you're not there. That's a really good recipe for not being concentrated. You know, don't worry about whether, just come back and think of it as a little push in the scooter. And of course you're going to lose momentum. But then when you feel it coming, then you just push again, push again. At some point, with samadhi, the life force inside of us, this is why being connected to your body is so useful in this practice, is that samadhi is supported, the whole practice is supported, by something being born inside that carries us, that moves us. It's like the path of practice moves us. It's like you've entered a current and the current is carrying you. So one of the examples the Buddha gives is that of an underwater spring that's flowing water into a lake. And imagine, you know, that maybe you can't see it so well, but there's a cool, refreshing, pure water that's this hole in the bottom of the lake that's spraying up this water, and it spreads this beautiful fresh water throughout the lake, just spreading it and spreading it and spreading it. And at some point, when we're tuned into the body, then at some point something gets born that begins moving through us. If we know how to open and relax, let go, we have amazing capacities. These five faculties are just amazing faculties that don't require Our, all the time, our intentional doing. I think it was one of, was it, I forget who it was, talked about the kindling being made, you know, and the fire being made, but it takes work to get the fire going, but at some point the fire is made, and then you can't stop it. California. And so, you know, we do this practice, we come back, we push our scooter, we push our scooter. We really learn to let go a lot, let go of our fantasies, let go of our wantings, let go of our resistance, let go of our fears. If it's easy to do so. If it's not easy to do so, then we let go of trying that. Just kind of be with what is. Let go so you can be with what is. Let go so you can be with what is. And at some point, samadhi involves the birth of these, of the faculties kind of revved up, running themselves. And when these five faculties are in harmony, then it's, to use another analogy the Buddha gave, it's like you're in the current and you're being carried by the current. And at first, it's a, the, you know, if you're the, if you're little crevice creeks and little streams and rivulets and all that, you know, they, you bump into the side, you get stuck, you get caught, it gets shallow and you don't go anywhere. Or, and, but once you get into the big river, and it's really noisy with all the creeks and the streams. And the Buddha said, once you get into the big river, it's silent, smooth. And then there's no much, very little danger of getting caught in the sides. And there's no one, nothing block you anymore as you go down the river. Or to use another analogy, the word, you know, for one of the words for concentration states is, or I'd say it differently, one of the verb in Pali for meditate is jayati. And jayati also means to burn. And so kind of when you're really have let go and settled on yourself, then it's kind of like a flame, like a candle flame. That's, there's no wind, so the candle flame is not wavering. It's completely still. But we know that the candle is dynamic. It comes to a point where work gets stiller and stiller and stiller. But it's not a stillness of something completely static. It's stillness that's dynamic. And to, and so to let go and be mindful, really sense and feel and know and experience your life now, and to have let go and let go and let go, you come home. If you want to be yourself, this is the way to be yourself. Samadhi is not an unnatural state. Samadhi is the natural state. Most of us, most of the time, are crazy. From a point of view of someone who knows how to have a settled, peaceful mind. It isn't that we're going off into some kind of, you know, altered, disconnected state. Most people walking around are disconnected, caught up in their thoughts, their fantasies, in their head, in their desires, in their fears, their, whatever it might be. So I ask you, with an active imagination, how are you when you have no fears? How are you when you're not resisting anything? How are you? When you have no greed and reaching forward and wanting, how are you? When there's no fantasy, how are you when there's no tiredness and no agitation? How are you when there's no doubt and confusion? How are you when you have faith in just being alive now with this? Just to be alive is enough. How are you when the effort you make is to let go into who you are? How are you when you allow who you are to appear in mindfulness, to arise in awareness? How are you when you feel rooted, steady, open, whole, unified? How are you when you are wise without having to try to be it? Be wise. Your innate natural capacity to know. How are you when you're not using thoughts to find your way? Who are you when you don't use thoughts to answer the question? What if to really know who you are, to really be yourself, what if to have real faith in yourself, to enjoy the vitality of your life as it is, to see yourself, to love yourself, to revere yourself, to be wise? What if it was mostly a matter of letting go into what's here already? And that anything that takes you away from this moment from this breathing body from this moment of simple awareness of what is, that whatever takes you away you can let go. and allow the peaceful flame inside of you to glow.